All right. Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the Housing, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. We have a quorum present. We will move to approval of the minutes. Do I have Representative Rehrauer is willing to move the previous meeting minutes?
Yes, so moved.
Great. Representative Rehrauer moves approval of the minutes for March 25, 2025. Any discussion? All right, hearing none, those in favor of the meeting minutes say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, the motion prevails and the minutes are approved. For the bills up for the day, we're going to move first to Representative Hussein's House File 2559. And members, while Representative Hussein is making his way to the front, we have already heard this bill in committee on February 26th. And the plan is to move. Just kidding.
I move the chair. House File 2559.
All right. All right, so moved. Representatives, the plan for this bill is actually to lay the bill over. So, Representative, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair, member of committees. I'm honored to be here in front of you today to present a bill that, you know, would help a lot of my district and throughout Ramsey County and in our state. We always talk about, you know, opportunity for affordable home ownership. And just to let you know that everything has been escalated price, staggering wage, raising interest rate, and creating challenge environmental for home buyers. For low-income household, the problem is not even more actual. It's challenge that they cannot even afford to stay in their rental space or even not to buy. We have enormous tools in our housing tools box. This will help House File 2559. As you know that, I'm honored to get to know Randall Lantras and to support a home buyer initiative pilot program in Ramsey County, Dakota County, and help first home buyers realize that American dream. And if we need to address for these housing issues, we need to invest more for peoples that's doing a great job within our community. And as you know that Randall Lantras has a history not only serving for African American, but are saving underserved community and the people that really need for home buyers. As you know that they have addressed a lot of concern in my district. And now they are expanding to work with Ramsey County and Dakota County that because this is really needed. Everybody need place for them to live. And I do have Executive Director Makia, Makia Griffin to testify on behalf for this bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Howard and members of this esteemed committee. My name is Makia Griffin, and I'm the Executive Director of Rondo Community Land Trust. I also serve as the Chair of the Minnesota Community Land Trust Coalition. I'm here to testify in support of House File 2559, which invests in the Rondo Community Land Trust Home Buyer Initiated Program pilot. This is not just an investment in affordable housing. It's an investment in long-term stability for our communities, ensuring that homeownership remains within reach for generations to come. Rondo Community Land Trust is, for the last 32 years, has been dedicated to creating permanently affordable housing and commercial spaces in St. Paul and suburban Ramsey County and Dakota County. Our innovative community land trust model ensures that a single one-time public investment has a multi-generational impact, making homeownership attainable now while keeping housing affordable in the future. Through the land trust model, though we're a developer and we build new construction homes, we also support and have supported so many lots of community members and other homeowners seeking their American dream. Last year alone, Rondo CLT educated over 600 families, and out of that, we have over close to 100 mortgage-ready home buyers in our pipeline, and a few hundred more doing what they need to do in order to be able to qualify for a mortgage. For far too long, many families, the dream of homeownership remains just that, a dream. Let me tell you a little bit about one of our waitlist clients. Her name is Maria. She's a single mother. She makes $44,000 a year. She has struggled because she wants to be able to own her own home. That's been a dream for her and her children, for stability. Currently, she is trying to even look for a rental, which is over $2,000 a month for a studio or one-bedroom apartment. We all know all of these things. She's currently living with her family. Investing in the homeowner initiated program will allow Maria to buy her first home. She's done all the things she needs to do to be mortgage qualified. And we really appreciate you, Maria, though you're not here today. And then rather than requiring ongoing subsidies, a one-time investment in the land trust model creates permanent affordability. For families who purchase a home through the land trust, they build equity, they gain financial stability, and when they sell, if they sell, they share in the home's appreciation. They get all of their money back that they put in and share in the home's appreciation while keeping the property affordable for the next family. This ensures the taxpayer dollars are used wisely, stretching each public dollar further to serve multiple generations of homeowners. Affordable homeownership is more than just a housing solution. It fuels economic growth. It strengthens neighborhoods. It creates great-paying jobs. Studies show that children, like Maria's, in stable homes perform better academically. And homeownership is the key and the driver of small businesses and success and long-term financial independence. By being courageous enough to support House File 2559, the legislator has an opportunity to make a transformational investment, one that expands homeownership, strengthens families, and fosters economic opportunity in the communities that we serve. I urge you to support this bill to make homeownership a reality for Minnesota families. Thank you so much. And again, thank you, Salma Cobb, for bringing this here, and thank you for your time today. If you have any questions, I'm available to answer them.
Thank you so much for your work and for this bill. Are there any member questions? If not, again, thank you, Representative Hussein. Thank you, Rondo CLT, for all your work. And with that, this bill is laid over. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to House File 1548, Representative Kozlowski. And as Vice Chair Kozlowski is making their way to the table, I'll note that the plan is to lay this bill over and would move this bill in front of the committee. Vice Chair Kozlowski, to your bill.
All right. Thank you, Chair and Co-Chair Igo and members, for the opportunity to present House File 1548. This is a pretty straightforward bill that would simply add housing and redevelopment authorities to the definition of local government in order to allow our HRAs to establish local housing trust funds. As many members here know, and the work that we've done in this committee and at the legislature, local housing trust funds are largely financed by HRA levies. And so we think this change will allow for easier administration of those important funds and the important work that our housing trust funds do to maximize dollars in housing. As you'll hear from my testifier, this change will be particularly impactful for our rural HRAs that operate in more than one county and can make the administrative burden of establishing a local housing trust fund a more complicated process. And so with me today, I have Melissa Taphorn with the Washington County Community Development Agency. To explain in more detail about how these local housing trust funds work and why we think this change will really maximize and bring benefit to our local communities and tackle our statewide housing needs. So thank you, and turn it over to our testifier.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Howard, Co-Chair Igo, and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the Executive Director of the Washington County CDA and also the Legislative Chair of the Minnesota Chapter of the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. We represent 150 Housing and Redevelopment Authorities, or HRAs, across the state of Minnesota. And House File 1548 is a simple amendment, yet a significant impact to our membership. In 2017, the legislature empowered cities and counties with the ability to create and operate local housing trust funds, and local housing trust funds are financed with public and private revenues to be used specifically for housing activities. One of our primary resources to finance a local housing trust fund is HRA levy revenues. Trust funds help communities leverage public and private resources and jumpstart projects that draw investment and jobs to our communities. The legislature has further encouraged local housing trust funds with a state match program and the inclusion of state local housing aid and local affordable housing aid as resources for those local housing trust funds. There are over 35 local housing trust funds currently operating across the state, and House File 1548 seeks to give the same power to HRAs. And HRAs are also political subdivisions of the state of Minnesota. But an HRA, and I want to make sure that you hear this because it's an important point in this context, HRAs can only be created by cities and counties or a group of counties in which it operates. And I'd like to share two examples of how this would be important. One is for my agency, the Washington County CDA is a standalone HRA serving the 33 cities and townships in Washington County. In 2005, the CDA established the GROW Fund to ensure affordable housing proposals in our community would move forward into production. In that time, 14 loans have been made to develop over 1,200 rentals and three owner-occupied homes with long-term or deep affordability commitments, and three more loans are expected to close this year. The CDA's GROW Fund leverages over $10 to every dollar the CDA has invested, and the CDA has invested $7.7 million of our levy and $3 million of LAHA funds, and that averages out to $8,700 per unit for more units committing to the deepest affordability levels. The GROW Fund, however, does not technically qualify as a local housing trust fund because it was not created by the county. Or by a county ordinance. Since it was created prior to the 2017 statute, there's a gray area, and this is causing Minnesota Housing to have to interpret whether or not HRA-created local housing trust funds are eligible for the state match program and also for use with the housing aid programs. And the second example I want to share is the Southeast Minnesota Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. That's a multi-county HRA serving Dodge, Goodhue, Wabasha and Winona counties with additional programs in Houston and Fillmore counties. SEMCRA is their acronym, had to establish three local housing trust funds, and their funds provide matching funds to stretch development dollars, encourage new development, and encourage new small local developers to build affordable housing and to meet local needs with their affordable housing partners. The funds were established by individual counties, which designated SEMCRA as their fund administrator. It took a year of meetings and approvals to create each one of those local housing trust funds, each with up to two separate funds, three separate committees, four boards, and three separate selection processes. There are two committee meetings per year, six different meetings with 2 hours of drive times for two of the counties, and three separate annual reports. This year, the contributions to those funds are $175,000, $200,000, and $300,000. The administrative burden of creating all of those and doing all of those meetings questions the value of the community's return on investment to create these funds. However, with this amendment, SEMCRA would be able to or be eligible to create one housing trust fund with separate county restricted sub-funds underneath it and could add additional funds if the counties or the cities asked SEMCRA to administer their state affordable housing aid dollars. This would allow for one committee, one board, one report. Most importantly, deployment would be through one request for proposal. So thank you, Vice Chair Kozlowski and committee members for your time and consideration of House File 1548, which we believe creates efficiency not just for HRAs, but also for the counties and cities they serve. Thank you.
Are there any questions for members? Representative Scraba.
I tried to follow along as good as I could, and questions kept coming through my brain. And so are you trying to eliminate the HRAs?
Representative Kozlowski or Ms. Taphorn?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Howard and Representative Scrabble. What we're trying to do with this bill is make it possible for more HRAs to actually come online. We know that for every dollar that local housing trust funds invest in housing, that we're able to unlock and leverage $6 in that state and federal funding. And so, you know, I've checked in with our cities and counties and have heard our HRAs are so often doing the work across the entire county. And so they support more counties being able to have these resources in across the state. And if my testifier has any additional things to add, but the intent is to actually make sure that more communities can benefit from local housing trust funds.
Representative Scrabble.
All right. Because, you know, like local government, the bill, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 words, that's it. And there's nowhere else in the language that this tickles. You know, like what I'm trying to say is the HRA that I'm used to working with, the federal government gives money to that, not the city. And, you know, if you're trying to include the city as an HRA, is that what you're trying to do? Is that basically?
Ms. Taphorn.
Chair Howard and Representative Scrabble, the bill is not all HRAs only do federal housing.
Like, right.
So a lot of us do more city and county work. So this bill is just granting us additional authority in addition to the city or the county. So if the city created that HRA and wanted the HRA to create the local housing trust fund instead of it being under the city budget and the city umbrella, it could give that HRA that authority to do so.
Okay. Thank you. Ding, ding. There. That went on. Thank you.
Not seeing anything else. Thank you for the bill. And with that, House Bill 1548 is laid over. And members, we're jumping around a little bit. We're going to move a vehicle bill that we intended to do first, but somehow the chair showed up a little late to his own meeting. So the bill that we're going to use as a vehicle is House Bill 1143. We've already heard this bill in committee on February 26, and the plan is to move it to Ways and Means to be a backup vehicle bill for Chair Igo and I in our budget work. And so with that, I move this bill in front of the committee, and I move to re-refer House Bill 1143 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Not. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and House Bill 1143 is re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Next bill up is House Bill 1340, Representative Lee's bill. And one other bit of housekeeping, because of our packed agenda, we're going to try to stick to a pretty firm 2 minutes per testifier going forward so that we can get through all our work. And so Representative Lee is not a member of this committee, so I'll move it to be before us properly. Representative Lee, welcome to the committee. Tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 1340. And so the bill will be to expand the use of housing infrastructure bonds for adapted reuse for the development of both supported housing and very low income housing. Mr. Chair and committee members, why I'm bringing it forth is, you know, when we go on our bonding tours across the state, we have seen several requests to repurpose school buildings, and I can't really, you know, do the justice that it deserves, but my when we heard this bill in the Capital Investment Committee last week, my testifier at that time, who works for the Minneapolis Public School, mentioned that public school buildings are the second largest public infrastructure component after our country's highway system. And so as we move throughout the travel throughout the entire state of Minnesota, we are seeing requests from communities asking how could we repurpose some of our, you know, empty school buildings for different uses. And so what I'm bringing forth today, you know, as we have these discussions with our community members in the city of Minneapolis, you know, in Minneapolis Public Schools, is that we have a lot of empty school buildings, and just wanted to bring forth this as a example of what we could possibly use HIDS for, just to expand that use for more housing in our communities. And really just want to say thank you to the bipartisan authors that we have on the bill. And with that, I'll stand ready for questions.
Thank you, Chair Lee. This is an issue that we've had a lot of discussion out in several bills, and feels like there is a lot of bipartisan work that's being done to see if there's ways to move this type of housing forward. Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think we talked about this several times last year, that if you go into the outstate and go fishing like I do, you roll by a lot of old school buildings that some of them are sitting empty. I think this is an interesting approach to that, because they are a very sound building most of the time, small amount of refits. So this is an intriguing issue. Thanks, Representative Lee.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. Who's going to be the ultimate owner of the building, and does it matter with bonding money?
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Representative Scraba, being on capital investment, you know, HIBs are, you know, they don't have the public ownership requirement as in, you know, GO bonds that we usually discuss over there. And so it will be the developers who are, you know, applying for the fundings from Minnesota Housing.
Okay.
Anything further? No,
nope. We're good. Thank you.
Not seeing any other. Chair Igoe.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Just want to also reiterate some of my colleagues here. Appreciate the bill, Representative Lee, and appreciate being a co-sponsor on the bill. It's a good motion in the right direction. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing any final comments.
Just want to say thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee members, especially, you know, on this issue. I think that, you know, this is an issue we're seeing across the entire state, and so really appreciate you guys having this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, House File 1340 is laid over. Next up, we have House File 2549, Representative Lee. The plan is to lay this bill over, and I'll move that House File 2549 be in front of the committee for consideration. Representative Lee, welcome to the committee and to your bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon, chairs and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to present House File 2549 today. This is a request for $44.6 million in housing infrastructure bonds for the public portion of housing development at The Heights, which is in the northeast corner of my district. I understand this is the last 8% of the financing package that's otherwise being funded through private and local dollars from the county and the city. Funding House File 2539 would help the city meet its goal of building 100,000, or pardon, just 1,000, not 100,000, not quite, maybe one day, 1,000 housing units on the east side, adding much needed housing supply as well as jobs and a tax base to our state. I will let my testifier speak to the specifics of the project, but you should know that this project has the unqualified support of the neighborhood, the city, and the county, as referenced earlier, to financing this, and then also want to mention that this project will be built entirely with union labor and will feature a first-of-its-kind networked geothermal energy system to provide low-cost, sustainable, and reliable energy to residents. The puppy agrees. I will now turn to Todd Hurley from the St. Paul Port Authority, who will give an overview of the project.
Welcome to the committee.
Great. Thank you, Chair Howard, Co-Chair Igoe, Representative Lee. Thank you for the opportunity to present on House File 2549, and I appreciate your time today. Again, my name is Todd Hurley, and I am the President and CEO of the St. Paul Port Authority. And the bill before you, as Representative Lee mentioned, is the final 8% of a nearly $750 million investment over at on the east side of St. Paul. It is a project that is set to bring 1,000 jobs to the site and also 1,000 affordable housing units. Just as a reminder to the committee, the Heights is the redevelopment of the former 112-acre Hillcrest Golf Course in St. Paul. The golf course closed in 2017, and the St. Paul Port Authority acquired that property in 2019. Through extensive community engagement from 2019 through 2021, the master plan came back and identified 54 acres of this site designated for light industrial jobs to provide up for 1,000 jobs, and 24 acres to be zoned for affordable housing, for 1,000 affordable housing units that we're talking here today. The St. Paul Port Authority is serving as the land developer in this project, and in working with our partners at the city, at the county, at the state, and I would also take this opportunity to thank the state. A couple years ago, we were awarded $11 million for the infrastructure package we've been putting together. So $11 million of the $70 million infrastructure package was partnered with the state, so thank you for that. We wouldn't be here without that. And the federal government has been a partner. And I'm happy to report that we are nearly ready to go vertical on the site. The site is 100% graded and remediated. The infrastructure, including roads and public utilities, is halfway there, and we will complete those roads and utilities, yep, by the end of this summer or early fall. Thanks to MnCEFA, the district geothermal system mentioned by Representative Lee is under construction. Late last summer, the Carter Works project brought funding and people to the Habitat for Humanity project on the site, and 30 units for Habitat are well under construction. And our first light industrial anchor tenant is under construction in Xcel Energy with 20 acres under construction. We are here in front of you today because this project is a little different. The scale and the impact of this housing are historically unique when talking about funding affordable housing. Due to its size with 1,000 units and due to its mix of affordability throughout each project, not just units, so that mix within doesn't lend itself well for any of the current tools available to fund affordable housing. This $44.6 million that we are here to request is the last 8% of the $420 million of affordable housing costs in this project, meaning that once we get that gap funding, we are ready to go. This project will offer all different affordability levels and uses. The 1,000 units will be high quality, they will be sustainable, they will be affordable. 147 of the units will be for ownership. 137 of the multifamily units will be for senior, and then there will be a mix throughout all of the units of 30%, 50%, 60%, 80%, and workforce housing.
Mr. Hurley, if you could get to the conclusion.
I'm wrapping up now, Chair Howard.
Thank you.
I just also would like to also thank our partners in here. We have our housing developer partners here. In Sherman & Associates is with us. Opara Company, JO Companies is with us. Habitat is with us. And just thank you again to the city and the county and the state. And I can stand for questions.
Thank you. Questions from members? Thank you, Representative Lee, and thank you to the folks bringing forward this bill. With that, I will lay House File 2549 over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, members, the next bill on the agenda is House File 1673, and the plan is to lay this bill over. So, Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill in front of the committee?
Yes, Chair Kozlowski, I'd love to move the bill.
All right, I understand you have the A1 amendment. Would you briefly describe that amendment?
Yes, this is just a technical amendment. We're adding a member to the task force and would appreciate support.
Great. Chair Howard moves the adoption of his A1 amendment. Any discussion, members? All right. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Howard, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski, members of the committee. House File 1673 is a bill that we're bringing forward, born out of the challenges facing us in the housing sector, not just for affordable housing, but affordable, accessible housing. Our committee this session has talked a lot about our housing shortage, about especially the shortage as it relates to affordable housing. But if you really want to talk about a shortage and you really want to talk about challenges, then we're talking about housing that's affordable and accessible for Minnesotans with disabilities. Those challenges range and are can be broad and specific, related to issues that our disability communities are facing. And we believe that the challenges warrant a task force to study this issue, to bring leaders and people with lived experiences from all over the state together to study this issue and bring forward a set of recommendations so that we here in the state of Minnesota can do a better job of creating and maintaining and preserving the accessible housing that all Minnesotans deserve in the state. And so with that, I would turn it over to my testifier.
All right. And just a quick reminder before we start the testimony, for this important bill and many on the docket that you'll hear the buzzer go off at 2 minutes and just ask you to wrap up your testimony at that point. But please proceed and share your name and your title for the record.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to come speak to you today about House File 1673. My name is Judy Moe, and I am the director of the Richfield Disability Advocacy Partnership. Currently, less than 5% of housing in the U.S. is accessible to people with disabilities. This is a crisis for the 26% of Americans who have a disability. It is also a crisis for the 88% of Americans who would prefer to age in their home, in their own home, or with loved ones as opposed to in a nursing home. And their ability to age in place often depends on the accessibility of their home. When HousingLink.com did their survey in 2022, they found that over 1.7 million searches were done for housing in Minnesota using their search tool, and according to that survey, 51% of those who performed a housing search reported they had one or more disabilities. In that same year, only 9.2% of the vacancies posted on their website featured one or more accessible features. And for renters who were not successful in their housing search, 59% reported the reason as not enough accessible rental units, and 80% reported not enough accessible rental units that were also affordable. I am the mom of a daughter, Raven, who uses a wheelchair, and in 2019, she and I lost our housing and were homeless for 4 months due to the lack of accessible, affordable housing. For people with disabilities who are able to find housing they can afford, they are more often than not scared to ask landlords for accommodations due to it being common for landlords to retaliate by not renewing a tenant's lease or worse, being pressured or bullied to agree to leave earlier than their lease term. Minnesota desperately needs a task force to look into the experiences of people with disabilities and the challenges of searching, finding accessible housing, requesting reasonable accommodations, and the challenges that go along with that. And finally, to give recommendations for improving the supply, quality, and affordability of housing for individuals with disabilities. Please show your commitment to working on this critical housing issue by moving House File 1673 forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us and elevating the important issue of accessible housing. Are there any members of the public that are wishing to testify on this bill? Right, looking around and seeing none, we will move to member discussion. Any discussion to the bill, members? All right, seeing none. Chair Howard, back to you for closing comments.
I want to thank Judy Moe and Raven for their work on this bill and their advocacy on behalf of Minnesotans with disabilities. This is a bill that will center folks that are struggling with finding that accessible housing, and I really believe it's an example of a task force that can really yield positive results. And so thank you for the time.
All right, and with that, I lay over House File 1673 as amended for possible inclusion. The next bill on the agenda today is another Chair Howard special in House File 2740. And the plan is to also lay this bill over. Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill in front of the committee?
Yes, I would move House File 2740, and I would also move my A1 amendment.
All right, so moved. All right, would you briefly describe the amendment, Chair Howard?
The A1 amendment makes a series of changes to get the bill in the shape I would like it, and would love to move the A1 and discuss it as I make comments on the bill.
Okay. All right. Having moved the A1 amendment, members, any discussion to the amendment? All right. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. All right. Chair Howard, to your bill as amended.
Chair Kozlowski, members of the committee, every Minnesotan deserves a safe and stable home. However, there is a shortage of affordable homes, as we've discussed, especially deeply affordable homes, putting that out of reach for far too many Minnesotans. Our state is fortunate, though. We have a group of many nonprofit and for-profit housing providers that develop and manage tens of thousands of units of affordable and supportive housing, and they are a critical driver in our housing market to make sure that Minnesotans, especially our lower-income Minnesotans, have safe, stable, dependable housing. Current pressures on our housing system have led to a frayed services and funding models which have implications for our communities and all parties in our housing system. Frankly, our housing providers are under a lot of financial distress, mostly due to factors or entirely due to factors outside of their control. Housing providers are seeing their costs escalate for things like insurance, security costs, and staffing to provide needed services. And at the same time, many are collecting less revenue due to the economic pressures facing renters. Underlying these financial pressures are government systems, such as coordinated entry, that are creating inefficiencies that are not serving renters and are also resulting in less revenues for housing providers that they desperately need to maintain their housing, continue to rehab it, and keep it the quality, safe, affordable housing that everyone needs. That is why last year the legislature passed created a housing task force to dive deep into these issues and understand the health of our housing sector, especially of our nonprofit and affordable housing developers, to understand what are the challenges, what's really driving this financial distress, and to discuss what are solutions, what are recommendations we can have to get to a roadmap of financial stability for our housing providers. And this legislation represents that fine work of that task force. We could spend a lot of time, but I want to boil down some of the key pieces of the task force in this recommendation that are part of this bill. One is we're asking Minnesota Housing to track key data and provide that data to this housing committee in the legislature to give us a better chance of understanding the health of our housing market, and to make sure that we're in the best position to be responsive with policy directives to address and move forward. Second, to use the power of convening. We asked Minnesota Housing to convene with local governments to assess their needs and strategize together to address these challenges, and also encourage the agency to convene what's called the Interagency Stabilization Group, or the ISG. This gets in the weeds quickly, but this is an informal group that's been very successful at helping individual housing projects secure needed funding and help distressed properties more on a one-off basis. We think that there's a lot of value in seeing this group work in a more formalized way to the benefit of our entire housing sector. Third, and this might be the biggest policy piece of this bill, is to ask the Minnesota Housing to work with our housing providers to create a policy framework, a roadmap, if you will, that is responsive to the current moment so that we get on a path to stability for our housing providers in the state of Minnesota. And the bill lays out some of the ways in which we seek that policy framework to move forward. Having some kind of grounding document like this could be really helpful to lay a base and help us move forward. And lastly, this bill includes critical funding needed to help stabilize our housing providers and be able to do the rehab needed and others ways to make sure that this housing is stable into the future, because when we lose this housing, it's gone forever. These are affordable units that when we lose them, we displace residents, and the affordability is gone forever. And this is a conversation happening all across the country. That's happening all across this country. We don't want it to happen here. That's why this bill is so important. And with that, I would turn it over to my testifier.
Excellent. Welcome to the Housing Committee, and I see you're there. So please state your name and title for the record and proceed whenever you're ready.
You bet. Chair Kozlowski, members of the committee, my name is Chris Latondras. I'm the president and CEO of Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Beacon owns and operates 24 multifamily properties, providing affordable homes to 1,200 Minnesotans. We're also the state's largest provider of permanent supportive housing that pairs deeply affordable homes with on-site services for those transitioning from homelessness. Today, Beacon and our peers in the nonprofit affordable housing sector are experiencing a perfect storm. Rising housing instability, mental health crisis, a deadly and rapidly evolving opioid epidemic, and the aftershocks of our post-pandemic economy. They're all forces that have hit Minnesotans and our residents very hard. For organizations like Beacon, it's led to surging costs and declining revenues. This is stacked on already razor-thin margins and outdated assumptions of the true cost of serving residents with the excellence, fidelity, and care they deserve and Minnesotans expect. This is especially true in permanent supportive housing. Before the pandemic, we could manage deficits in these older properties by offsetting them with newer cash-flowing ones. But today, many properties are in deficit from day one. It's not sustainable. It's forcing incredibly hard choices, and it's pushing many of Minnesota's nonprofit affordable housing operators to the brink. A recent report found annual cash flow at nonprofit properties dropped $1,800 per unit from before the pandemic to after the pandemic, 2018 to 2023. That's a nearly $50 million annual hit to the sector. Every single year, we keep our doors open. We are here to serve Minnesotans, but the system is not working as intended. This bill is the right response at the right time. It aspires to create a policy framework for targeted stabilization, match service dollars with supportive housing awards, convene state agencies and local governments to better align on homelessness and housing insecurity strategies, and to ensure timely reporting for accountability and transparency on these critical public investments. This bill isn't just about funding, though greater investment is sorely needed. It's about protecting what we have already built and making the system work better for everyone. We thank Chair Howard and the task force for their leadership, these recommendations, and we urge your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and being here today. Are there any members of the public who are wishing to testify in this bill? All right, seeing none, we will move to member discussion. Members, any discussion to the bill? No one on the list? Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Howard, for bringing this bill forward. I just kind of have a general question of how you see the ongoing appropriation about this working, particularly because it seems like a lot of it will be provided to our nonprofit housing developers, but also trying to understand how that will help right-size the business model now, because from what I've heard in the past couple years, things like this have been around, and then just also talking with nonprofit developers, trying to figure out the best way to keep that group stabilized, but also making sure that we are using our public dollars in a way that will help revitalize, so that way people can be self-sustaining without having to rely on the state government.
Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. Thank you, Representative Bajay. I think we need to do multiple things at once, and we have provided public resources in the past few years to provide some financial safety measures or address the current deep financial challenges, and that's been critically important. And we still do need more, I believe, to stabilize. But I think what we're seeing from the task force is the kind of both-and mode of policy reforms that can get at some of the financial implications. You know, we're hoping that this policy framework, in the way it's conjured here, can allow Minnesota Housing in particular to provide some pathways for developments to cash flow better or to reduce barriers to allow them to get to stability. So I think we're still in a place, because of all the outside pressures, that resources are needed to help stabilize. And then with the implementation and ongoing work of the policy reforms, I think that's how we get back to sort of the plan to stability.
Representative McBadgey.
Thank you, Chair, both chairs, for that. I appreciate that. I think it's still kind of an ongoing conversation. Obviously, there's definitely support that's needed. But I think kind of in the long run, as we're sort of thinking about these and the various tools that we have to address our housing needs, particularly in this space where, you know, we've just heard from so many tenants who live there that they aren't actually receiving some of the benefit of this, and that, you know, that there's still things that need to be done with security services or property maintenance and all that type of stuff. And so while I understand, you know, funding is part of that, it'd be interesting to have a discussion about kind of what ongoing funding would look like in the future.
Members? All right. Not seeing any other members on the list. We'll turn it back over to you, Chair Howard, for any final closing comments and response.
Thank you, Chair Keselowski, and members. And I also want to thank all the members of our task force that worked on this issue. This was a lot of hours and time spent over the summer, and I really encourage folks to spend some time with the task force itself. This legislation is an important first step, but we need to have more conversation, and we need our eyes on this issue, because if we aren't, we're going to run into more problems down the road. It's we have important housing providers all across the state, and we need to be a part of that solution, and that's what this bill represents.
Great. And with that, I lay over House File 2740 as amended for possible inclusion. And I'll hand the gavel back to Chair Howard.
Up next, we have House File 2507, Representative Mamanya Hiltzley's bill. Would you like to move your bill in front of the committee?
Yes, thank you so much, Chair Howard.
The bill is before us. Please describe your bill.
Thank you for the opportunity, Chair Howard and the members of this committee and the community members who are here. The House File 2507, the African American Affordable Homeownership Development Program, it's a bold, community-driven effort to close one of the most persistent and painful racial wealth gaps in Minnesota, a gap in home ownership. As a representative of a proudly diverse district in the whole entire state of Minnesota, and as a daughter of immigrants who struggle to plant roots in this country, I know what a home means. Home ownership is more than just a roof over your head. It's stability, safety, and legacy. It's a foundation upon which dreams are built of, wealth is passed on, and families can thrive. And yet, the black Minnesotans whose foundation has been denied for generations, in the state of Minnesota, over 70% of households are homeowners. Only 28% of black Minnesotans own their own home. And while housing stability is a challenge for many, 60% of the black households are cost burdened, paying more than they can afford for rent or mortgage. Double the statewide rate. This bill is not simply about statistics. It's about black children waking up every morning in instability, about families forced to choose between rent and groceries, about generational consequences of being blocked out of the most basic American promise. That if you work hard, you should be able to own a home and build a future. House File 2507 meets this crisis with community-rooted solution. It does a couple of things. One, it expands affordable house ownership opportunities. It invests in black-led workforce development. It supports land acquisition, design, and new construction. And lastly, it's building capacity for black-led housing organizations to shape and lead their own community developments. This program doesn't just build houses, it builds pathways for generational wealth, fosters economic mobility, and returns the power of ownership to communities who have historically been excluded. Members, home ownership is not just a luxury. It is a cornerstone for equity and a tool of liberation. If we are serious about dismantling systemic barriers, then we must be just as serious about investing in solutions led by those most impacted. With me today, I am honored to have Ms. Neda Presley, who is an iron in fighting racial justice and racial and social justice in our community as a testifier. Thank you.
Ms. Presley, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Howard and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today in support of House File 2507. My name is Naida Presley, and I am the president-elect of the St. Paul NAACP. I recently retired after nearly 20 years as the executive director at Aurora St. Anthony Neighborhood Development Corporation, and I am a proud historic Rondo descendant. The bill is important for two reasons. First, Minnesota needs this legislation. Local organizations are working hard to produce the objectives outlined in this legislation. The problem is that those organizations are not adequately resourced. I am very familiar with this because my part of my job at Aurora St. Anthony was to support this line of work. State support is needed to build sustainable, affordable homeownership development opportunities. Secondly, Minnesota will gain mightily from investing in the smart, targeted provisions in the bill. Economic growth and security for Black residents means greater economic gains for all Minnesotans. So increasing homeownership and reducing housing costs burden in the Black community will yield direct economic benefits for our state. Affordable, sustainable homeownership will also have a positive impact on children and families' well-being, neighborhood development, and public safety. Thank you for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you. We move to member discussion. Any discussion or questions from members? Representative Kozlowski, Vice Chair Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative, and to your great team of testifiers. I just want to say thank you for bringing this bill forward and for your leadership. You know, I think back to, in my own community, how there's been histories and talk about history, but it's like living present folks that we know that have had documented riots and strikes and petitions against Black Minnesotans and saying you can live here and you can't live here, right, and boxing folks out. And I think in my own community of Mr. Carter, who's the first Black resident of Duluth, and his family, he was a dock worker in my Lakeside community in my district. And he had a petition started against him when he tried to buy a house in Lakeside. And it was actually started by our mayor, of all people. And this hardworking person who's trying to provide for his family, making a good way of life as a dock worker, and the atrocities that happened, and I won't get into here, but there is well documented in our community. I'm happy to have more conversations. But suffice it to say that the community rallied against having Mr. Carter and his family live in the community. But a church, his church community rallied around to say, you belong here. But it took the church putting the offer in purchasing it on behalf of Mr. Carter for his family to be able to live in our neighborhood, and that's just wrong. And so I think when we have heard about the zoning reforms and these efforts that were set up to keep folks out and hold them back, that's still holding us back today, to the investments that we've made as a committee that I think we can all be really proud of and continue to make investments like this, because what is good for Black Minnesotans is good for Minnesotans. I mean, so I support this work and the efforts, whether it's Representative Agbaje's leadership in making sure that the 27,000 Minnesotans of color, many Black families who are ready to step into ownership, can do that, to the HECAT that makes it possible for folks getting into home ownership opportunity, and, you know, things that are hampering them. And so just a huge kudos to you and to keep going.
Representative Mamanya Hiltzi, closing comments on your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair, and to all the committee members for allowing me the opportunity to be here and be a part of this work. And so I urge you for your support, not only for the sake of equity, but also for the future of Minnesotan families, communities, and generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you. I lay House Bill 2507 over for possible inclusion. Next, we have House Bill 2461. Representative Norris. Representative Norris, would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Yes, Chair Howard. I move House File 2461 for possible inclusion in the omnibus or the housing budget bill.
So moved. Representative Norris, to your bill.
Chair Howard and members of the committee, House File 2461 addresses a pressing need for Minnesota's manufactured home residents by providing essential funding for down payment assistance and cooperative ownership, ensuring long-term affordability and financial security for low and moderate income families. House File 2461 will also allow for greater flexibility in cooperative conversions when parks come up for sale, allowing opportunities for resident-owned communities. There are a number of reasons to support House File 2461. First is preserving affordable housing and expanding home ownership. Manufactured home communities are the largest source of naturally occurring affordable housing that we have here in Minnesota. Despite being an essential homeownership pathway for thousands of Minnesotans, these communities face financial challenges that limit their long-term stability. By providing $5 million for down payment assistance, this bill ensures more families can afford to buy homes in these communities. Second, this bill helps with closing the financing gap for manufactured home buyers. Unlike traditional home buyers, residents in manufactured home communities lack access to conventional home loans and down payment assistance. This bill provides a targeted solution, ensuring those home buyers have equitable access to financial support. Yeah, third is that it supports resident-owned cooperative models. When residents can purchase their manufactured home parks as cooperatives, they gain long-term control over their communities, preventing displacement and rent spikes. But with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency no longer providing financing for these cooperative conversion, resident groups have lost a crucial tool for securing their homes. So this bill includes a $5 million investment in a revolving loan fund that will allow organizations like North Country Cooperative Foundation to continue supporting these transitions. And lastly, it ensures long-term affordability and community stability. Without intervention, private investment in manufactured home parks can lead to increased lot rents and displacement, which we'll hear more about later. This bill's funding would ensure that manufactured home parks remain affordable for at least 30 years, and investing in these programs now prevents future crises, saving taxpayer money by reducing the need for emergency housing assistance. And with that, Chair Howard, I would turn it over to my testifier.
Thank you. Our testifier is Emily Stewart, Associate Director with North Country Cooperative Foundation. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, and hello, Chair and committee members. My name is Emily Stewart, Associate Director at North Country Cooperative Foundation. Minnesota is home to 805 manufactured home communities supporting nearly 45,000 affordable homeownership units. These homes cost about half as much per square foot as site-built homes, but this affordability is at risk. Homeowners usually don't own the land underneath their homes, leaving them vulnerable to investors, infrastructure decline, and closures. Between 2010 and 2020, these communities appreciated in value by 478%, making them prime investment targets. At North Country, we believe resident ownership is the answer. When residents buy their communities, they control their budget, invest in infrastructure, and secure their future. Thanks to your $10 million appropriation last session, our loan fund has already committed $4 million to preserve 254 homes in Alexandria, Breckenridge, Zumbrota, and Fairmont. Our average interest rate is 4%, well below market, and in our past deal, we just used $300,000 in deferred interest capital to cut rents in half, saving each household $720 a year. But we're facing a new challenge. With Minnesota Housing pausing its mortgage lending due to liquidity and staffing constraints, we're back here asking for an additional $5 million to meet the growing demand that we are experiencing in the market. House File 2461 also funds the first of its kind down payment assistance program for manufactured home buyers, who are often excluded from traditional mortgage tools. Paired with the newly matched mortgage product from NeighborWorks Home Partners, this will open doors for 150 families with this bill alone. This bill supports both preserving affordable communities and expanding homeownership to working Minnesotans. Communities are ready. We're ready. Let's meet the moment together. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We move to member discussion. Not seeing any. Representative Norris, closing comments on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Howard. In summary, this bill is about fairness, stability, and protecting the largest source of naturally occurring affordable housing that we've got. The investments we make today will provide long-term benefits for families, ensuring that they have access to safe, stable, and affordable housing. I urge the committee to support House File 2461 to help us secure a brighter future for Minnesota's manufactured home communities. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, the bill is laid over. Representative Norris can stay in the hot seat there. He's got House File 2381 up next. All right. Representative, the plan is to lay this bill over. Would you like to move your bill in front of the committee?
Chair Howard, I move that House File 2381 be laid over for possible inclusion in the housing budget bill.
So moved. And Representative Norris, I understand you have an author's amendment, which is the A7. Would you briefly describe the amendment?
Yes, thank you, Chair Howard. This amendment gets the bill in the intended shape. It includes two additional types of cooperative corporate forms, and then actually adopts a recommendation that came from the Senate hearing on this bill, switching the notice requirement from every resident in the park to every household in the park.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? The A7 is adopted. Representative Norris, to your bill as amended.
All right. Thank you, Chair Howard. Manufactured housing in Minnesota is in crisis. You can see it in the articles and the emails that have come across my desk in just the last couple of months. We've got a December 6th article from the Star Tribune. Hermantown, Minnesota cracks down on trailer park owner over, quote, deplorable conditions. A December 9th article. Mobile home residents seek rent relief from Lake Elmo. An email I got on January 25th, urgent issue impacting Hispanic community at Cimarron Park, Lake Elmo, Minnesota. Another Star Tribune article, this one February 12th, Minnesota Housing Agency sues to keep mobile home park open in Marshall. Another email, this one, Brandondale just turned off the water to the entire park overnight in sub-zero temps. Got that on February 16th. March 10th, Lakeville steps in over concerns of severe lack of investment at expanding mobile home park. And then most recently on March 13th, Hermantown trailer park owner begins to close in lieu of fixing life-threatening problems. There are about 180,000 Minnesotans living in the state's roughly 800 manufactured home communities. 90% of these Minnesotans who live in a manufactured home community own their home but rent the land underneath it. This halfway home ownership structure makes manufactured housing unique from other housing markets and also calls for similarly unique consumer protections. Today, you will hear the story I've been watching unfold in my district and in red and blue districts across the state. Private equity swallowing up what used to be a mom-and-pop industry, seeing some of our state's lowest-income residents as nothing more than profit centers, while rare resident-owned cooperatives serve as beacons of hope, showing how these parks can remain one of the last best sources of naturally occurring affordable housing in our state. The stakes are high, which is why this manufactured home park resident Bill of Rights is a weighty bill. It does three big things. First, it tackles the issue of excessive rent increases by finally defining reasonable rent as no more than a 3% annual increase. Second, it creates a true opportunity for residents to purchase their park if it were to go up for sale and create a resident-owned cooperative. And third, it creates more enforcement of laws already in place and clarifies the community owner's responsibility for things like tree care and utility maintenance. I'm proud to stand beside dozens of residents who are with us here today and thousands more all throughout the state. In fact, we've got signatures here from over 2,000 manufactured home park residents in Minnesota. And I will now turn it over to some of them to share their stories.
First on our list is Natividad Seafeld, president of Park Plaza Resident-Owned Cooperative. Welcome to the committee.
Good Good afternoon, Chair Howard and committee members. My name is Natividad Sifa, and I am president of Park Plaza Cooperative, a resident home community in City of Fridley, and I am going on 14 years of being the president. In 2010, our owner sent us all a letter saying he is selling and would like to give us the opportunity to purchase, long before I even knew what that was. Shortly after that, we received a letter from North Country Cooperative Foundation. We're here to help you purchase your community. We gathered together in our local library, and we voted yes. We became a community on February 15, 2011. Going forward, since then, we have pulled together to redo our rent credit bill that we did not know was not available to us when we became a co-op, with bipartisan, both a Republican and a Democrat in our office. We got the bill passed. 6 years it took us, but we did it, so now we have our rent credit back. 2016, we did $1 million worth of infrastructure. We revamped our loan. We did not raise the rent. And I will stress, we did not raise the rent. For those of you who have communities that are outside owners, we did streets, water, sewer, lights, added 7 fire hydrants, of which our community did not have, added extra manholes to be able to access the sewer lines, added readable water meters to every single home at no cost to the residents, including the piping that it took to do that. Fast forward 2018, we also did a reach for a grant to build a storm shelter. We received $424,000 to do so. We used $79,000 of our own money that we saved, and we took out a small loan, and we all voted yes to a $6 increase. I stress that again, only a $6 increase. We now have a community center and a beautiful storm shelter that can withstand up to an F5, the first of its kind, above ground. Please come and see it. It's beautiful. We just had beautiful parties there this weekend. Quickly, going forward, I cannot stress enough that we only have 81 families. We don't raise the rent every time a tree falls. We don't raise the rent every time the taxes go up. We did not even raise the rent this time when our taxes went up. So if we can do it, we know others can do it, and there's no reason to go above 3%. I urge you to please look at the file, House File 2381. Please, please pass it for the 189,000 families who are not as lucky as us at Park Plaza to be safe and have control of our finances. We own our land, and we own our homes.
Thank you. Next, we have members. We're not going to do clapping, if you would. Next, we'll have Matthew Spellman, Senior Director of Advocacy for Minnesota Realtors. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, it's good to see you again. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in opposition to House File 2381. For the record, my name is Matt Spellman, and the chair already did my introduction for me, but I'm the Senior Director of Advocacy for the Minnesota Realtors. Minnesota Realtors is a business trade association representing over 21,000 real estate professionals working with buyers and sellers of all types of property statewide. I would like to highlight two concerns here today, first of which, Minnesota Realtors oppose rent control policies. Rent control policies disincentivize investment in new construction of properties, as well as it disincentivize investment in existing properties. Section 8 of the bill establishes rent control on manufactured homes or manufactured home parks by imposing a 3% rent cap on rent increases from year to year. Imposing rent control on manufactured home parks may adversely impact one of the most affordable housing options in Minnesota. Second, Minnesota Realtors supports policies that recognize and protect the right to own, use, and transfer real property. One of the fundamental rights of any property owner is the ability to freely market and sell their property without unreasonable restrictions. An owner of any property, including a manufactured home park, may have any number of business and or professional reasons for deciding to sell their property. The notice and opportunity to purchase process established in Section 10 would prevent a park owner from accepting any offer for the sale, lease, or transfer of the park without first giving 60 days written notice. Additionally, Section 10, Subdivision 4, would result in another 15-day delay if the owner rejects any offer from the residents. This section also requires the owner to share the prices, terms, and conditions of the offer received. This is a significant change from the information that must be disclosed under current law. Minnesota Realtors believes this section is a substantial interference in the right of a property owner to freely sell their property and may deter potential buyers who are not willing or able to wait out the delay mandated by this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Sammy Silver, resident of Cimarron Manufactured Home Community. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sammy Silver. I'm a resident of the Cimarron Manufactured Home Community in Lake Elmo. I'm the vice president of the Residents Association. I'm a real estate broker, and I'm the CEO of Bright Idea Properties, a property management and realty company that manages nearly 200 rental units across the Twin Cities. I'm here today because manufactured home ownership is one of the last truly affordable paths to home ownership and generational wealth, and it is under attack. Predatory rent increases are pricing residents out of their homes, while corporate landlords pocket millions, often while neglecting the very communities that they're profiting from. 4 years ago, my lot rent was around $700 a month. Today, it's $1,019. That's a 45% increase with no added benefits. Our rent does not cover home maintenance, it doesn't cover lawn care, and it doesn't cover snow removal for our lots. What it does include is water and sewer from a PFAS-contaminated well and frequent harassment and mistreatment from the management company. That's an amenity none of us were aware that we were signing up for. Without this housing option, my business that I own and the opportunity that gave me likely wouldn't exist. But the future of this opportunity is vanishing under the weight of massive unchecked rent hikes. Some suggest trying to tie the rent stabilization bill to the CPI, but over the past 3 years, inflation has ranged from 5.2% to 9.4% annually. That would allow double-digit rent increases, completely defeating the purpose of this bill. Instead, we propose a reasonable 3% cap with exceptions only for verifiable health and safety repairs. This is a necessary step. We cannot afford to do nothing. And let me be clear. The residents in this room today, myself included, we're not going away. This problem is not going away. We will not stop fighting for a solution. This crisis doesn't just harm families, it weakens Minnesota's economies. When families are forced to put more and more of their income towards the lot rent, that's money that's not spent at local businesses, restaurants, or even on their own children. Instead, it's funneled directly into out-of-state corporate profits, draining our communities and worsening our housing crisis. This is not a partisan issue, it's a Minnesota issue, and it's an issue of fairness, stability, and economic opportunity for working families. Please stand with your constituents and not with corporate greed. Vote yes on this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Dave Check, president of TriPark Investments. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Howard, members of the committee, my name is Dave Zeck. I'm a community order in Blaine, Minnesota. This lucky guy is my state rep. I'm going to surprise you. I'll try to keep this under the 2 minutes. I'm just going to kind of hit some key points. Talking about trees seems like a waste of my time to talk to you about trees. Safety hazards aren't talked about. We had a storm last year. The last trees to be taken care of were trees that were controlled by neighboring property owners and a neighboring city, not us. I've never hired an arborist in my entire life to decide if a tree needs work. Almost every resident thinks there's something wrong with their tree. I'm not saying that sometimes there aren't complaints, a very common complaint. I'm going to speak against rent justification. I've been doing this a long time. We try to give some background to residents when we do that, as we did when we rolled our rent back at the start of COVID and saved our residents $50,000 in rent over the course of a year. They didn't appreciate that letter any more than the ones that when I tell them that it's going up. Residents in general are disappointed when rent goes up and usually don't care why I tell them. Whether I point out that other parks are considerably higher, like some of these people are talking about, or not, they simply don't care. They are only, it affects them, and that's what they're concerned about. Certainly against rent control. He lives in Blaine. He knows what Blaine's done with their sewer rates just in the last 2 years. 18% increases 2 years in a row. After we did our rent reduction, we've had 3 years of double-digit bottom line increases in expenses. I heard testimony today, even from the chair, about the pressure that people that are in affordable housing are under today to try to provide that. This bill seems to, and that was very heartwarming to me, like, oh, they do understand what we have to go through. And then you say, but 3% is up. I'm not sure that naturally occurring affordable housing exists if you're talking about giving infrastructure grant money and low interest loans to people, right? That's not naturally occurring, right? Those words are used to describe what I do for a living. I don't have those things. We try really hard, not here to speak for corporate guys that do what they're doing, but this bill affects me. It doesn't affect them much anymore, but it has a pretty significant impact on me and being able to maintain my property for my residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Michelle Carlson, real estate broker and owner of Mike Ives Realty. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair and committee members. My name is Michelle Carlson. I am a second-generation manufactured housing community owner, real estate broker, and I am here to speak in opposition of House File 2381. I own and manage six communities in the state of Minnesota with 1,100 home sites and over 2,500 residents. More and more people in Minnesota of all ages do not want that financial burden of land ownership. Many are leasing apartments. In our industry, they're leasing the home sites, land lease communities. And these residents are choosing to live in a safe neighborhood, a neighborhood with convenient amenities and professional management. Land lease communities are a great choice, but this bill is not. This bill spreads a false narrative that all communities are increasing rental rates unreasonably. And as a community owner, I'm very sensitive to my rental increases and to how that affects my residents. Putting statewide rent control is not a way in which would allow for me to adjust for fluctuation of increased operating expenses. This is unfair. Most of these increases are uncontrolled. They're coming from property tax increases, utility rate increases, increases in street repairs, asphalt, construction materials, and most recently, insurance increases. Vendors are also increasing their costs, and these are uncontrolled by us, the community owner. Rent control would severely diminish my ability to operate my business at the highest level for my residents, and it will cause me to cut back on maintenance and improvements. And you're just taking my livelihood. You're also taking my property rights away, not allowing me to market or sell my communities to any buyer of my choice. And as a business owner, every business owner should have that right. It's a taking of property rights without just compensation. The current notification of sale language is working. Let's not end it. I'd like to say once again that Greater Minnesota is in dire need of affordable housing. And privately owned communities are the biggest advocates of non-subsidized affordable housing. Let's work together to help develop affordable housing, not hurt us with rent control and rent justification and taking away property rights. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Mark Lambert, Summit Management.
Chairman Howard, members of the committee, thank you for your time this morning. My name's Mark Lambert. I've been a community owner for 41 years. I have two important points that I want to make today regarding the first right of refusal language It's not first opportunity, it's a first right of refusal. Number one, line 1.1 of the bill, who are the resident representatives that are advocating for the first right of refusal bill? And number two, this bill is breaking a hard-fought negotiated deal with both houses and the governor's office that many of us made in these same rooms just 2 years ago. Back to number one. If this bill is passed, it will subject every single manufactured home community sold in the state of Minnesota to the scrutiny of the unknown representative of the residents. We really know what this means. It means cooperatives. And by this law, they will be given the first right of refusal to purchase every community in the state of Minnesota, again, presumably in the name of the residents. My concern is the bill contains a long list of duties, of requirements of these owners, that they must reply with good faith. We have to, we have to be reviewed for possible damages, including accidental, incidental, consequential damages. What's missing in this bill? Absolutely no standards of good faith or good conduct on the cooperatives. They frankly have a license to do whatever they please. They have no pre-qualifications. We simply need to get a name out saying we're interested and they're qualified. They have no opportunity, and they may not even have the ability to put a deal together. In short, they get to look at every single sale in the entire state of Minnesota, regardless of their qualifications, and then claim that they're working with the residents, and they actually can stall by litigation a sale. So I'm really concerned about who are the representatives, who's the cooperative. Secondly, and I'll make it real quick, when the trifecta came up, we didn't want a first right of refusal, but the industry came to this room and we agreed to the notice of opportunity to be heard. 9 notices have been sent out in the last year. There is no testimony here indicating whether the cooperatives even approached those 9 opportunities to be purchased. There's no indication as to whether or not there was even an effort to try to acquire communities. Let's give the notice of opportunity an opportunity to work. We all worked hard to be here. It's only been on the books for a year. It's time to give it a chance. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Mark Bruner, President, Manufactured and Modular Home Association. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Bruner, Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota. We're formed in 1951 and represent the private owners of the nearly 900 manufactured home communities in Minnesota that are home to about 50,000 residents. We also represent the builders, the plants that build manufactured and modular homes. About 85% of the new homes we build today go on private property, are financed with conventional traditional type mortgages. We have several concerns with the bill. Excuse me. We have several concerns with the bill. You've heard several of them, eliminating fundamental property rights, imposing rent control, needing to justify rent increases, and blowing up an agreement or a deal that we made on the notice of solicitation 2 years ago that just took effect in 2024. It really hasn't had a chance to be in effect to determine if in fact it is working. There appear to be a variety of provisions in the bill that address maybe a one-off situation, incidents that, you know, such as, you know, a tree falling and now needing an arborist to come and determine, you know, how much of a branch needs to be cut off on the tree. I mean, I don't know where you find an arborist in, you know, greater Minnesota to come out and do that for you. Obviously, it would be very expensive. There are a few points we do support, perhaps with some tweaking, limiting the late fee for delinquent rent to 8%. We think that is that's reasonable. It's actually something that we adhere to right now. However, we would suggest that the bill reference 504B in statute, that's the landlord-tenant law that we currently follow, because if it's in the bill as it is right now, it would only apply to the homes that are on private property or on the land that they're paying the lot rent for, not for the home and the lot. We also believe that there needs to be some clarity in the provision on page 216 regarding repairs and damage that may be caused by a resident. We think that needs to be added into the bill so that if the damage is caused by the resident, that they're responsible for that cost. And finally, the bill requires the community owner to provide a reason for a rent increase. You've heard prior testimony. We're not aware of any other business that's required to post a notice as to why they're increasing their prices. And then finally, the rent control provision. You know, there seems to be, focus on a few perhaps properties where there have been some excessive rent increases. We certainly know what happened after the city of St. Paul adopted its rent increase capital, fled the city, went to the suburbs. If you adopt a statewide rent increase in Minnesota, they won't have anywhere to flee but outside the state, and that'll certainly put a stop to any new development of manufactured home communities in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next on the list is Gwen Elliott, resident from Blaine International Village Manufactured Home Community. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Elliott, and I live in Blaine International Village in Blaine, Minnesota. I moved in there in January of 2020. The rent was $385 a month. That was supposed to be my retirement home. I was just retiring. I had worked for 32 years at UPS, and I wanted to move into something that was going to be affordable and sustainable. Well, to my surprise, Haven Park Investment Group of Utah, outside of the state of Minnesota, bought our park. And after I moved in, and they paid $32 million for this park, twice what the market value was for the park. As a result, now my rent is $635. That's what the increase is now. New people moving into my park are paying $885 a month now with the mandatory lawn care service. And that so many of the parks are paying more, even more than what we're paying in rent. Because the rents have, lot rents have escalated so high, people like me have had to come out of retirement. I thought I was set. I did my 32 years. I thought that was a done deal. But now I'm working again to afford the lot rents. We still have mortgages. I bought a brand new home when I moved in there. I have a mortgage. It's not just lot rent, not just the dirt underneath. We have 2,000 petitions that we've had signed, and we will continue to do this. We will not stop at this point. I'm asking this committee to consider us, to consider this bill, and consider passing this bill. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any members of the public wishing to testify? If not, okay. Please state your name and welcome to the committee.
My name is Christine Kelly, and I live in Cimarron Park, and I've been on the board
I was a walk-on on the board because of a lot of other things that are happening in the park that aren't fair, but I'm not going to go into those. But I am going to say to everyone here, I make food for people that don't have money to buy food. My neighbors fasted for 72 hours to feed their kids, and we had to find food for them to help them. I'm sorry, but I don't know. You guys find a solution. Figure it out. It's not, we're just people trying to survive. My lot rent is $1,020 a month. I moved into a $600. I also was going to retire, and I've been working for 45 years, and I'm still working. I have to console the elderly because they're so scared. They don't know where they're going to get the money to pay for their rent. Figure it out. Talk to these big companies that are coming in here and raising, jacking the rent up. I mean, this is crazy. I went from $600 to over $1,000 in like 4 years. It's not okay. People don't... You don't plan that. And when you're getting older and you're ready to not work anymore, and you don't think you're going to have to go get a job again, or you don't think you're going to have to work twice as hard just to make the bills. And this is our affordable housing, people. This is our affordable housing. Is it affordable? It's not. You hear all of us crying over here. I don't want to consult people anymore. I don't want to cook food for people anymore. I want to do it as a labor of love, not a necessity. I love doing it, but not like this. So please consider this and work together. If you're not happy with the way this is, the 3% doesn't work for you people, then figure it out. Don't come in here and cry. Give us a solution. We need a solution. We're hurting. We're all hurting. And it's more than that. But again, we're not going to talk about that. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now move. Yes.
Chair Howard and committee members, I'm Sue Watlow Phillips. I'm the executive director of MICA, the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing. We strongly support this bill. And I think what we need to recognize is the fastest growing part of our homeless population is elderly and people with disabilities. This is the next group of folks that are going to experience homelessness with continuing lot rent increases. So we need to address this. I understand the concerns that have been brought forward today. I think we need to continue to move forward with this bill and work with the residents, as the homeowners, as well as the folks that have properties right now. But I think if we don't address this, is that this is going to be right here in front of you again in the next year with people being homeless. Thank you. And that will cost 10 times as much to get them rehoused as to keep them housed right now.
Thank you. Now we will move to amendments. There is an A4 amendment. Who is going to bring forward the A4 amendment? Representative Johnson, is the A4 your amendment?
Sorry, Chair Howard, just going through the different amendments. So A4 is amendment I'd like to bring forward. It's to adjust the wordage, page 2, line 18, before the period insert, unless the park owner can provide the need for repairs was caused by a resident. That one is in there. Do we want to just go one at a time?
Yeah, so what we'll do, Representative Johnson, is we will go one at a time, and we'll ask you to move the amendment. We'll move that amendment, and then if you want to briefly describe it, and we'll go to Representative Norris first after that, and we'll go one by one.
Okay.
So maybe on that one, we'll just, the A4 is before us. Representative Norris to the A4.
Chair Howard, Representative Johnson, appreciate you bringing this one forward. I consider it a friendly amendment and would recommend a yes vote.
Any discussion to the A4? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The A4 is adopted. Next, Representative Johnson will move to the A5.
Okay.
I'll just, Representative Johnson moves the A5 amendment before us. Describe it for us, please.
So the A5 is also, Mr. Chair, sorry.
Go ahead, Chair.
I'd like to move forward amendment, which is an adjustment. Page 3, delete section 7, renumber the sections in sequence and correct the internal references. Amend the title accordingly.
Representative Norris.
Chair Howard, Representative Johnson, I'll maybe provide a little bit of additional background on what that does. It strikes the provision of the bill that requires the park owner to provide basically a rationale for why the rent is going up. Existing law already requires that rent in manufactured home park rent increases be reasonable. Therefore, it seems reasonable itself that a park owner should be able to articulate the reasons for an increase. And therefore, I'm going to recommend a no vote on this amendment.
Representative Johnson, anything further on the amendment?
No, no further comments.
Any discussion? If not, all those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A6 amendment. Two-year A6, Representative Johnson.
Sorry. Just getting to where that is again. I apologize. Yep, I got page 5. I'm just looking for delete section 10. Sorry, Mr. Chair, I'd like to bring forward page 5, delete section 10. Renumber the sections in sequence and correct the internal references, amend the title accordingly. As was mentioned earlier during testimony, section 10 is talking about the first right to refusal. And since it is already in there in the previous bill, it still has time to see how it's working. So it's just removing that whole section. Thank you.
So the A6 is before us. Representative Norris.
Chair Howard, Representative Johnson, one of the best solutions that we've got to addressing this challenge is converting as many parks as possible to resident-owned cooperatives. This provision enhances existing notice requirements to give residents a true opportunity to purchase their park when it goes up for sale. Therefore, I'm going to recommend a no vote on this amendment.
Any discussion to the A6? Representative Johnson, anything further?
No further comment. Thank you.
Not seeing any members that want to get on the list. So all those in favor of the A6, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
No. The A6 is not adopted. Next. Next we'll do the A8. Representative Johnson, to your A8.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Howard. Just getting to that page here. So Amendment 8 is on page 3, line 24. Delete everything after the period. Page 3, delete lines 25 to 29 and insert a rent increase may not exceed the average of the annual percentage increase in the consumer price index for shelter for 3 years preceding the increase. For the purpose of this paragraph, the consumer price index for shelter means the most current seasonally adjusted index for the shelter expenditure category of the consumer price index for all urban consumers, CPI-U, as published by July 31st by Bureau of Labor Statistics and United States. This amendment was an attempt in the many conversations that we had going back and forth to try to find a more palatable or agreeable answer for the 3%, and so that's what this amendment was for. Thank you.
Representative Norris.
Chair Howard, Representative Johnson, nothing else in this bill matters if you can't afford to stay in your home. After all, it doesn't do you a lot of good to know that the trees are going to be maintained over a house that you had to walk away from because you can't afford the lot rent. We've heard and seen parks across the state that are able and have demonstrated that you can have and manage a financially sustainable park on 3% or less increases every year. I do appreciate the dialogue that's occurred around this particular section of the bill, but after consulting with the resident advocates, I'm going to recommend a no vote at this time.
I see Representative Scraba. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Johnson, what is the average? Did you look up to see what the average, what's an average price?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you for bringing that up. It got brought to my attention that over the three-year period, I know one year was, I don't have the exact years, but it went 9%, another year was 5%, another one was like 7%. So basically taking those three averages and figuring out that would be the rent increase. So.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, anything further on your amendment?
No, thank you, Chair. I'd just like to add, we had a testifier up here saying if we don't like the, you know, if we're uncomfortable with the 3%, come up with other ideas. This was our attempt to come up with something, another idea. So thank you.
Any other members? Not seeing any. We'll move to the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Johnson, there is also an A3. It is very similar to the A8. Did you still want to move the A3 or are you?
Pull that one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. That is all the amendments we have. We have two members on the list. Members, we are approved to go just 5 minutes late, so we have a little bit of extra time before this bill is laid over. Up first, Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Norris. I know this is a topic where, you know, you've put a lot of time and effort in over the past couple of years. A question I had for you, and there was something that came forward earlier, but, you know, what laws are on the books currently for, you know, you hear the stories of these bad actors? And I'd just like to get a better idea from you, either state or local laws on the books impacting some of these.
Mm-hmm. Representative Norris.
Chair Howard, Representative Myers, appreciate the question. We do have a whole chapter in state statute that has laws related to manufactured housing. One of the challenges we've run into is there's not a lot of good enforcement mechanisms. And so while the law may be on the books, it doesn't do you a lot of good if there's no way to enforce it. So you'll actually notice one of the sections in my bill adds additional enforcement mechanisms to add some teeth to those existing laws that we have on the books. There's a law that says that rent must be reasonable. But because there's no definition in state statute and because of where it's placed in state statute, courts have ruled that it's relatively toothless. So this bill attempts to address that. We've had some conversation about the beefed up notice requirements that we passed in 2023. You know, on that one, again, you know, what we've seen is that unfortunately that law is not being followed. I'm told that since the law went into effect, Minnesota Housing has received 8 notices, yet 31 sales have closed between when it took effect and the end of 2024. In most cases, the notices arrive too late after the property is already under contract or we receive notice and it's nearly impossible to find someone to actually connect with regarding the sale. So it's frustrating to me, you know, Representative Myers, we've served on this committee together now for 2+ years. You know I've been working on this hard. You know, so the industry knew that we were watching and we were concerned about the behavior. And so when, you know, we reach a deal and we see that it's not followed to a T, it leads to residents coming to me with greater concerns and me concluding that we have to bring a bill with greater weight, with greater enforcement tools to make sure that the laws that are already on the books are enforced and that we beef up those areas where we've got some weaknesses.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. You know, and I appreciate you, you know, pointing out a few of those, the reasonableness, some of those other things. You know, I remember my first term, different committee, but I got really frustrated when I heard that workers were being put through something for unsafe conditions, and the solution was to keep drafting a bill. You know, I know there are laws on the books. I would have liked to have seen the Attorney General, you know, actually, you know, address this a little bit more. I know there's been letters sent to him, but he has those opportunities to address it way quicker than us trying to pass a bill if this doesn't pass this year, if you keep looking at it. But those are the kind of frustrations I have. So thanks.
Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I just have a few comments, but I will try to keep them quick. For some of the testifiers, things that I just wanted to share, I recently had an arborist to my home. They come, they give you a free consultation. They give you a free quote. They can let you know if it needs to be taken care of or not. Secondly, this is a unique thing in that these residents own their home, but not the land under that home. And I have been to a manufactured park in my city, and these homes are cared for and loved. Porches are built, steps are added on, gardens are next to it. This is not something where this would be easy for a resident to pick up their home and move it somewhere else. It's just not feasible. And so a delay of 60 days, a delay of 15 days after that, I'm sorry, but you're literally selling the land under a homeowner's feet. I'm not concerned about a 75 delay on that to allow them the opportunity to possibly join together and purchase it for themselves. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I mentioned this when we debated this 2 years ago. If you haven't taken the time to read the Federalist Papers, I strongly encourage you to. It is foundational to the country that we live in. And James Madison said very clearly on a number of occasions that the rights of persons and the rights of property are the objects for which protection of the government was instituted. Property rights matter. And I certainly understand what the folks who have testified here are going through. But we should not lose focus or lose sight on the fact that the person who owns the underlying property has rights as well. And I believe that you believe that, Representative Norris. But fundamentally, our country is predicated on property rights, and this bill seeks to deprive the person who owns that property of their rights as well. So I would be opposing this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hussein. We'll go to Chair Igo.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you to the committee members. Thank you to those that came in to testify today. There were some good stories today, but I think the most important thing is we had a really good conversation. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one of the things that was brought to us by one of the testifiers was taking away the freedom to understand and be able to operate their business where they're providing housing to people. And I think when we're looking at this issue and we're talking about this issue, something that was really important that was said that I want to make sure this committee understands as we talk about this issue is that these rents and everything around it, we live in a time where costs are rising all around us. Some of those costs are rising based on decisions that happened in this room, based by people in this room saying no to that one side said yes to. So some of those costs that have been being pushed back on these property owners that are managing these parks have happened because of decisions that were made outside of this room. And because of that, we have a bill in front of us today that's bringing with it rent control. And rent control, no matter how much you look at it, whether it's here in the city of St. Paul or whether it's on the other side of the coast or some other city, it doesn't work. It causes huge issues. And it can't continue to be the solution when we face hard times. When we face hard times, we need to look at the root of the problem that's actually getting at these rising rent prices. And a lot of that's things that we can do inside this chamber, outside this committee. So for that reason today, I mean, I think there's work to be doing on this bill. But I think we need to get away from always looking at rent control as the answer when we can find other solutions that are going to make Minnesota better for all. Thank you.
And Representative Johnson got on the list. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, Rep. Norris. I know you and I have spent a lot of time on the phone and talking about this, and I also like to recognize and thank the residents of Cimarron Village and also Blaine International that shared their experiences with me. There's some issues that I asked Attorney General Ellison to get involved. I know he's been asked before and didn't get involved, so I decided to try and do this again. There's some issues outside of the rent control issue that need to be addressed in Cimarron that have been shared to me. I would like to continue the conversation and start working for some of these other issues, whether the trees, the lights that were mentioned. But I would just like to recognize all the efforts that people have made and the advocacy they've had, and to say I would like to continue the conversation to address, you know, specifically the issues that are going on in Cimarron Village in my community. So thank you.
I'll just make a quick comment before going to Representative Norris. Just want to thank all the residents that came, and thank you, Representative Norris, for just being an absolute champion for manufactured home residents across the state. We are lucky in this legislature to have such a champion. I'm trying to remember a time of anyone coming to the committee with a petition with 2,000 Minnesotans saying we think this is a good idea. And that is impressive organizing amongst this community. And to me, it says that, as folks have said, this is a problem here that needs to be solved, and the folks aren't going anywhere. So we have work to do on this bill. And I thank you for doing this work and being committed and a champion working in partnership with Minnesotans. So you get the final word.
Thank you, Chair Howard and members. I'm disappointed we're going to have to lay this bill over today, but I can count votes, and I know we don't have the bipartisan support that's going to be required to advance the bill. So we'll lay it over, and we'll keep doing the work of trying to convince legislators to stand with residents over private equity firms. But I also hope that today's hearing has put private equity firms on notice. We have no plans of standing idly by while you take advantage of some of our lowest income Minnesotans. When people are forced to choose between staying in their homes and paying for food and gas and medicine, Minnesotans will rally to support their neighbors. I ran for office to help make people's dreams possible, not watch big out-of-state corporations swoop in and crush them. So I hope legislators from both sides of the aisle will join me in making sure that we write more stories like Natividad's Park and no more stories like Sammy's and Gwen's. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Norris. And with that, I lay over House File 2381 as amended for possible inclusion. With that, members, we are adjourned.